people don't often realize there's 65,000 people sitting in a county jail in Texas on any given day. Many of these people are unconvicted. They're awaiting disposition of their case, and most of those people are there because they don't have the bail.
If there's anything you should take from today's episode, it is just what a fragile thing a world is. Not one's physical world so much as that whole dense web of connections, relationships, obligations, appointments, investments, hopes and dreams that constitute a life. Often, what allows one's world to proceed is just the fact of it not having yet encountered or dealt with an obstacle, complication, or threat that could irreparably harm it. Depending on the particular ways in which the fabric of one's world is woven together, how tightly or how delicately, what might be a brief disruption for one person can for another result in losses, and not just in money or property, that are unrecoverable. This episode is about jail. It's about folks who are unlucky enough to wind up in jail. As you will see, a lengthy jail stay is not just any other distraction or interruption or sidetrack. At a minimum, it can mean loss of a job, loss of one's health, loss of one's future prospects. But that may not be the least of the unraveling. For certain people, and in particular those who suffer from mental illness, a stay in the county lockup can have world-upending or even world-ending consequences.
Our guest today is Diana Clater of Texas Jail Project, an organization that advocates for the families of people held in local jails. She was inspired to start the organization by a friend of hers who was locked up for protesting and trespassing on the property of a petrochemical plant. And she's here with us today to talk about her work, the history of her organization, and what she's learned about effective advocacy on behalf of an often invisible population. Diana, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, just to start, what is the Texas Jail Project, and what was the impetus for its creation?
The Texas Jail Project is a statewide nonprofit dedicated to improving county jails and improving the treatment of the people in them, and we're based here in Austin. There are many myths and misconceptions about county jails and many problems associated with them. There's a lot of neglect of health issues and poor conditions in many of our 245 county jails. People don't often realize there's 65,000 people sitting in a county jail in Texas on any given day. Many of these people are unconvicted. They're awaiting disposition of their case, and most of those people are there because they don't have the bail for, and often it's a very small amount of bail. So we have all those people sitting in the jails, and they don't have any means of asking for help. So they tell their families, and the family members reach out to us. They email us, they call us. Sometimes they write letters, but it's mostly emails. And we help those families. We get them information. We get them resources to appeal to. We give them a way to share their stories. We also go to media, and we go to legislators, and we go to the Texas Commission on Jail Standards, which is the only oversight of the county jails. We have a very small part-time staff and a group of volunteers, and we hope to expand all that.
Okay, and so what do you consider, or who do you consider to be the main audience for, you know, the kind of information that is on the TJP website? Who is it exactly, in your mind, that you would most like to influence?
Well, we have a very mixed audience. It's hard to put it in that prioritize it in quite that fashion. Of course, the families of the inmates are our main audience. We get somewhere in the neighborhood of 130,000 individual visitors in a two-year period of people wanting information. So we really have to consider exactly how we put information on there and the different educational levels and the different needs of the families of incarcerated people. At the same time, we're serving the Texas legislature and we're providing information to officials, whether it be county or state, and to the general public and to media. So it's very difficult. I guess we would say the main audience is the families of the incarcerated people.
Okay, and so can you give some examples of like the sort of political action you've been taking around this issue? I mean, I would assume that you've got an eye on, you know, the upcoming legislature.
Right.
And do you have a sense of what it is that, you know, that friendly legislators will be working on?
I think we all have a sense. I'm part of a little coalition of mental health and criminal justice organizations, and we all have a sense that the interest and the objectives of the legislature will be centered on people with mental disorders that are incarcerated. And since that's been a top priority of ours ever since we, launched a website, which was 10 years ago this year, we're very hopeful that the legislature will really take a serious look at these problems and the way people with mental illness are treated in the county jails, and the fact that the county jails are now up to some estimates of 1/3 of all the inmates are diagnosed with serious mental disorders. And that number of people, to give you an idea, is really a lot larger than I would have ever thought. Every year, 1 million people are booked into Texas County jails. Now, a certain percentage are booked out, are bailed out immediately, but there are many people held for weeks and months and in years. And so when you consider that up to 1/3 of those are people with mental disorders, I think the Sandra Bland case has really focused the attention. And we've had multiple hearings around the screening of people to find out mental disorders and how to deal with them. So we anticipate and are working on ways to increase the care in the jails and decrease the abuse, because mentally ill people are uniquely vulnerable to abuse and punitive tactics, you might say, because they act out sometimes, and jailers who are oftentimes undertrained and poorly paid do not deal with that very well. So,
yeah, I mean, the state has been on this trajectory toward less punitive approaches in general.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't think that there are very many people who are cognizant of just what goes on,
right,
at the level of the, you know, the local county jail.
Exactly.
You know, most people's framework is, you know, longer term incarceries.
Right.
And I think, you know, the Sandra Bland story in particular seems to have brought about a sea change.
It has.
In people's thinking about, mm-hmm, about what it is that the person might experience even just sitting in jail awaiting trial.
Right.
Even though we like to bandy about the word policy,
mm-hmm,
around here as much as anywhere else, really what we're talking about is people.
Right.
And as much as anything else, your organization deals with people who are caught up in pretty harrowing and tragic sometimes circumstances.
Right.
And so I was just wondering if you could, you know, for the benefit of our listeners, maybe just give us a couple of examples that help to illustrate what exactly is at stake for people.
Right. Sandra Bland was such a good eye-opener for people, because I think most of us assume, well, if you're in jail for a few days, what can go wrong? And she's a perfect example. Another example that we have on our website, which we recently launched, called jailhousestories.org. It's a story of what happens to people while they're being held pretrial. And one of the most tragic, I guess you'd say, is Victoria Gray, who was held in Brazoria County at the behest of her family, I might add, they actually were convinced that they could get her some mental health care and get her transferred to a hospital because she had had experience in that jail. The jail knew her history of long-time schizophrenia. She was only 18. She was a beautiful girl. And instead, the jail simply locked her up. And even though she had attempted suicide in that very jail 6 months prior, she was left alone, and she was killed herself within 72 hours. That devastated the family, the parents. The father was the one who called me, and it brought home how quickly, even you know, even though she already had schizophrenia, even a person like Sandra Bland, who was functioning pretty well on the outside, how quickly people can deteriorate in a county jail. Another example of what's at stake in terms of the way people are treated and the problems with the staffing in the jails is Nicole Guerrera, who was a small-time repeat offender with minor drug charges, who was brought in while she was pregnant. And despite her crying out and asking for help and requesting help numerous times, was told she was faking, which is a very common response of jailers especially. And she was forced to bear her child on the floor of the jail. And that was in Wichita County, which has a really bad record, I might add. Right now, it's out of compliance, is the term, with the jail commission. But the occasion on which this occurred, the nurse didn't have a current license. She ignored her, and the baby was born with oxygen cut off and died there in the jail. And the jail just didn't take responsibility for this. Finally, they were sued and took a little responsibility, but that didn't help Nicole and her child. So we think that stories like this, and there are many, these are oftentimes cited as, oh, that's the exception, or, gee, that one fell through the cracks. But unfortunately, we find quite a few cases like this, and plenty of men also. I know I cited two women, but plenty of men that suffer under extremely inadequate medical care and are neglected. I used to use the term, trying to get people's attention, I would say they were jailed to death because so many people die in the jails. So the rate of death in jails is much higher than in the prisons.
Yeah. And Texas being such a large state, information, particularly when you're talking about a fairly marginalized population, mm-hmm. can be slow to travel.
Right.
And it really depends on having a listener who has the know-how and also the passion to be able to do something with the information that they get.
Right.
So I was just wondering, like, how it is that you go about, you know, gathering information about just what is going on out in the far corners of the state.
Right. Well, it's a continual challenge. We're always looking for solutions to it because that's exactly one of our problems. When you have a state with I forget the exact number, you know, it seems like it's 10 million square miles. When you have a state where you can drive for 11 hours, you know, it's very difficult to collect stories from everywhere and to get the word to people that there is some place to report things to. That really has depended upon the internet in a huge way. At the same time, having a web presence, which has helped us immensely, it also leaves out a large segment of the population. I often talk to Texas Inmate Families Association, and they were telling me how they have a print version of their newsletter just to reach all the people that don't have internet access or don't even know how to use, you know, Google to search for a organization to help them. And that's one of our main stumbling blocks. We feel like we have a lot more people, but as it is, we reach people through our Facebook presence. We have two Facebooks, and we have, of course, our two websites now. The main website, TexasJailProject.org, with a lot of information on it, and inmate stories, which started there. We started collecting stories almost from the beginning. And then we got a grant two and a half years ago, and curated a group of stories for jailhousestories.org. And that was specific stories about people held pretrial. So really our internet presence and word of mouth is how people find out about us. Every once in a while we do an op-ed piece and we get an increase from that town when we do that. Recently I found out an interesting thing was because the local mental health authorities are often understaffed and can't always help people, they will quietly tell folks, you know, I can't help you with your brother's problem, but go to the Texas Jail Project. And more and more I've asked people, how did you find out about us? And they'll say, well, somebody at the, Blue Bonnet Behavioral Health told me to call you. You know, so it's an interesting thing on it. And whenever we do have a presence in a town, like we have gone and had rallies at places like Montgomery County and Denton and Victoria and various places, immediately there's an increase in emails and calls because people find out about us. So it's a real challenge to get the word out.
Okay. And that has to be quite a compliment, but also something of a dubious honor too.
Yeah.
just because, you know, your name only gets mentioned because there's some gap or lack elsewhere.
Right.
So are there any counties that you can single out as having made significant improvements in their policies or procedures? Or at least awake to the issue.
Right. I have seen some changes and improvements. One of the jails we consider having the most proactive and robust program for mentally ill, for people with mental illness, is Brazos County, which has a partnership with Texas A&M and brings in students to assist with things like assessment and counseling and various things, but we're talking graduate level. But they also have something that we wish every county jail had, which is a really strong relationship with their local mental health authority and their Takumi representative, who actively works to alert deputies, this person has this problem, or if you're going to release him, let me know so that I can get him some treatment or an appointment. So they have an ongoing relationship, which is what jails need to have in order to serve those special populations. Some jails have increased their services for veterans that are incarcerated. Others have not badly, you know, they're just let veterans of our wars languish while nothing is done to help them with their charges or with their mental health issues. But another jail that has surprised me and encouraged me is Cameron County down in Brownsville, which is a really large jail with a lot of conflict, and it has cartels and different kinds of populations. And they just have initiated this program that the state is funding for forensic peer specialists, which are ex-offenders who go in and develop a program to help the inmates. And the inmates respond to them like flowers to light because they have been there. They've been in jail. They've had issues. They've been through treatment. They show them the other side of the coin. You can come out of this problem area if it's an addiction or if it's mental health problems. You can come out of it and succeed. And so our most hopeful sign is that we'll have more and more of these peer specialists in the jails, and I think they will really improve not only improve the situation for the inmates, but help the staff see that these people are in need of support and not just be condemned as, you know, drug addicts and losers, which is unfortunately sometimes the way they are, you know, characterized by staff. And so there's, you know, there's some definite improvements. The jail commission is encouraging and overseeing various improvements for medication and all kinds of things. But we still have a long ways to go, needless to say, and it's a lot of jails. And the thing about jails is they're all run individually. So you can be in Ector County and have one experience and cross the county line and get pulled over for a ticket and put in that jail and have a radically different experience. So,
okay. And so at last, we would like to get to know you a little bit better. So maybe you could tell us just a little bit more about, you know, your personal background and what life was like for you, let's say, in the few years leading up to the creation of Texas Jail Project, and maybe, you know, just after.
Right. Well, I had been sort of a kind of freelance journalist and done a lot of different things in my life, but primarily journalistic and research oriented. I'd done a lot of research at the archives here in Austin and kept a kind of wide range of interests. But once I found this area through my friend, I'd actually done a profile of Diane Wilson for a magazine on the East Coast, and she was actively protesting and was arrested, and then that's how I began to be aware of the county jails and what was going on with them. And I was so outraged, and it was an interesting time because the four women who formed this group were really different. I mean, Diane is a fourth generation shrimper from the Gulf Coast who is, you know, famously intrepid and has done a lot of different kinds of protests. The Colonel Ann Wright was a person who admired Diane, and she came down here and visited her in the jail. And then Kinu Krishnaveni Gundu was an Indian immigrant at that time. She's now an American citizen who lived in Houston and was interested in Diane's work. And then myself, because I had profiled her, when the four of us came together and said, you know, something has to be done about these county jails. And of course, because of my background with the journalism and living in Austin, it sort of fell to me to head up this little project. And as soon as we started it, we found out that indeed, it's oftentimes they tell people not to start nonprofits because it's already being done by somebody else. And what we found out that nobody else was doing this. Yeah. So it's been a real inspiring line of work. People think it's very depressing, but I've come to realize and know thousands of Texans who are incredibly brave in the face of all kinds of circumstances that many of us would just quail or walk away. And so I feel pretty honored to have been thrust into this role, even though I didn't expect it. And it's become my life's work now. So I'm really glad that it's evolved like this, but there's just a tremendous need for more people than me and my tiny staff. So we're working on that.
Okay, and what is your website URL again?
The main website, www.texasjailproject, all spelled out, TEXAS jailproject.org. And then the new one that we just launched 2 months ago is jailhousestories, all one word, .org.
Okay, so if you're looking for information, if you're looking for an advocate, if you're trying to get a sense of the scope of the problem and what more needs to be done to address it, visit TexasJailProject.org. Diana Clater, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk about your work, and we hope that you're going to get some heavy duty help with it in one form or another in the months to come, and we'll do our part to help.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been great.
Before signing off, we thought that we would leave you with a bonus. At the behest of our guest, Diana Clater, we reached out to Melissa Nardoza, whose boyfriend, Blake, has been sitting in a Collin County jail awaiting psychiatric treatment. He was found incompetent to stand trial for the alleged holdup of a hotel clerk in 2015. Here is Melissa to tell us what life has been like for her and for him.
He is a combat veteran. He originally was in the Army right out of high school, served for 4 years in the Army, went to Iraq with the Army, came home, and then switched over to the National Guard and went on two more deployments with them. He went back to Iraq in 2010 and then most recently did a year at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, as a guard over there, and returned in May of 2014. So he had not been back that long when all of this occurred. He was only home about 10 months when he was arrested. And he's been in jail about 18 months to this date. He was arrested in April of 2015. They were very reluctant to give him medication. He's been diagnosed with PTSD and was having a lot of symptoms leading up to this event that got him arrested. He had a lot of stress going on at home. His brother committed suicide. Blake was in a bad car accident a few months later and totaled his car. He was in the process of switching jobs at work and was attending a very stressful military training. So it was a lot of issues going on all at once. He's been charged with aggravated robbery and also aggravated kidnapping. I don't know the full story, but a general description of what happened is that he went into a hotel and tried to rob somebody of about $250. And he restrained the person during the robbery, which is where they're getting the kidnapping charge. In January of this year, of 2016, he was evaluated and found incompetent to stand trial. And so it took until May for a court order to go through saying that he needed to be sent for treatment to regain competency. So that order went through in May. It is October 1st today, and he is still sitting there in jail. He's been sitting, waiting to be moved to a hospital. He's gotten very little support from the VA. He did seek help at the VA before all of this happened, and they, kind of brushed him aside like they like to do and sent him along his way with a couple of prescriptions in hand, and that was kind of all the support that they were willing to offer. And he also has a veterans representative from the VA that is not very helpful in this situation and, doesn't really advocate for him like I feel they should. And I've been told by that individual, he's just a criminal like everybody else. And I have a hard time accepting that because I feel like, no, he was still active in the National Guard when this happened. And he was recently back from a pretty terrible place, and had a lot of, issues coming home and readjusting to life back here. And, just going about his daily life was very difficult. And I mean, it was obvious that he was having symptoms of PTSD, and I'm just shocked at how difficult it's been for him to get help. And even now he's being sent to a hospital, but it's not going to be for PTSD care. I mean, it's going to be to restore competency to go to trial. And he's likely to go back to a county jail and sit for several more months after that. It's extremely eye-opening and frustrating. I mean, neither Blake nor myself have ever, been in jail, experienced, this sort of situation or the legal process really in general. And it's shocking how, unjust it is, and how because we don't have the financial means to post his bail, which is quite expensive, or, you know, hire a better attorney that he just has to sit there for so long. And I was reading an article recently about a similar situation with a veteran who was incarcerated and charged with a couple of felonies. And he was saying that jail is like the least therapeutic environment for someone with PTSD. And I mean, I couldn't agree more. Blake is very depressed and, you know, he doesn't think he's ever going to get out of jail. And, you know, that's hard to deal with and hear every week, and, you know, how he's preparing himself to go spend 20 or 30 years in jail after this.
That was Melissa Nardoza on her boyfriend's situation in Collin County. To learn more about her situation or about the issue of jail reform in general, contact me at imani.evans@austin.utexas.edu. Imani is spelled I-M-A-N-I. And that does it for this episode of Into the Fold. You can find us on SoundCloud or on iTunes. Feedback, comments are appreciated. Thank you very much.